Welcome to the Baptist Joint Committee podcast. I'm Jordan Edwards, Communications Associate here at the BJC. My guest is Don Bird, author of the BJC's popular blog From the Capitol. Don has been blogging about church-state issues for the BJC since 2005, and his work is recognized this year by the Religion Communicators Council with an award of merit at the annual DeRose Hinkhouse Memorial Awards. He is joining us via Skype from his home in Nashville, Tennessee. First, I'd like to congratulate you on the award.
Thanks very much, Jordan. Thanks. It's a great surprise.
Let's start with how you got started with the BJC. So why don't you tell me how you got started blogging for the BJC?
Well, let's see. I'm, first of all, a news junkie. I consume all kinds of news and all kinds of topics and issues. And I've always been a fan of the BJC and a supporter of the BJC as well. So my brother was an intern there. He had a job there, and that's how I got to know Brent and all you folks there. So I contacted Brent with the idea of a daily side of kind of church state news and perspective. And we talked it over, and I remember creating a kind of mock blog for him to see what it might look like content-wise. And we kind of went from there.
Okay, great. Now, when you started 10 years ago, did you ever think it would end up being the way it is now in terms of how important the blog is to the BJC's daily operations?
Well, I certainly hope so. And I hope that not just to the BJC, but to readers and supporters to have a place where they know they can get that reliable voice. And I don't know that I would have envisioned the way that social media works to generate these stories the way that they do now. Stories generate steam in a lot of different ways, and they 10 years ago it's become a lot more efficient in that sense. It almost seems like you can go have a day of shopping and come back, and there's been a war on Christmas while you were gone that's been waged and won or lost one way or the other. So things happen more quickly in some ways, but in a lot of ways it's the same stories.
Talk to me about how the church state news landscape in 2005 compares to the church state news landscape now.
Well, I mean, there's probably a lot more that's similar than dissimilar. We still have stories about Ten Commandments in government buildings and prayer at government meetings and religious issues in schools and school vouchers and all that. In fact, in some ways, the church-state landscape in news is the same not only as 10 years ago, but as 50 or 60 years ago.
One thing I want to mention is that in 2014, you earned your law degree, graduating from Belmont University College of Law, and now you are a member of the Tennessee Bar. How has law school changed your perspective on religious liberty issues?
Well, that's a good question. I think, you know, one way is that I learned that the answer to most questions is it depends, which is a kind of obnoxious thing that I've learned, I'm sure, but in some ways I lived through the frustration of that being the answer to my questions, and now I understand a little bit more clearly why that is the answer so often. You know, we want answers to questions like, can graduation be held in church? That seems like pretty straightforward, and the answer is, you know, maybe, sometimes, it depends. And so that's one thing that I've definitely learned is to understand why that's the case and to accept that a little bit more. I mean, the truth is for us, these issues that courts address are big picture religious liberty issues. But for courts, they're cases that they try to resolve, cases between specific parties that have very specific issues between them. And so the court doesn't always answer the questions that we would like. A good example of that is the Hobby Lobby case, which of course is the case where a company was challenging the mandate in the Affordable Care Act to provide contraception coverage to their employees. We were, you know, a nation waited with bated breath, and then we all kind of got to sigh as the court said, well, you know, sometimes, maybe. It depends. So they kind of clarified that in that case, that company's owner could, and we don't really know about in other cases.
Recently, we've seen states pass and discuss and struggle with different bills that are all named Religious Freedom Restoration Act. We often abbreviate it as RFRA, or we call it RFRA. Take me through what it's been like witnessing all the RFRA actions over the past 2 years or so.
Well, I think it was certainly surprising to find RFRA, of all things, on the front page of newspapers all across the country. That was a pretty surprising thing. I think we all knew that there were some controversial issues surrounding it that dealt with the law, but I don't know that we would have thought it would have been, you know, CNN nightly news material. So that's been pretty interesting. State after state has been challenging and interesting to keep up with.
Speaking of state after state, you put together a state RFRA tracker that's on the BJC website. Could you just kind of explain what the state RFRA tracker is in layman's terms and what people can get out of it?
Sure. Well, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is what we're calling RFRA, and that's a federal law that deals with religious liberty issues. And this year, we just had an inordinate number of states that proposed some version of a RFRA law. And so what the tracker does is kind of divide it up by state and lets you see which states, lets you read the bill of each state and lets you see what kind of progress the bill is making in the legislature, and read some of the key language that's in the bill and any notes that I think are important about it. So it allows you to follow along kind of daily whether a state is making progress on a bill or like in many of the states this time, if they're not making progress.
Okay. Why did you make it? How did you make it? And what issues did you encounter while creating it?
I mean, it seemed like there were, Indiana had a bill, and Michigan had a bill, and Arkansas had a bill, and trying to keep up with, you know, which state was that I just read about yesterday, was getting more and more difficult with all the bills had slight differences, and as we've learned, those slight differences can make all the difference. It can be the most important element of the bill. So I wanted to have a place where I could keep up myself with which state was how far along and what their precise language was and things like that. And I just assumed that if it confused me keeping up with it, that there may be others who could benefit from it as well. So that's the why. And how I did it was just, you know, going through state legislative websites and trying to ascertain which bills were how far along. And luckily we had, I believe that was the week that we had a big ice storm here in Tennessee. And so it's kind of stuck at home anyways.
So Don, tell me what roadblocks or problems did you encounter while creating the RFRA tracker?
Well, I think the biggest roadblock to keeping up with all the state RFRAs was the fact that you couldn't always depend from the news footage or from even what the advocates were saying. You couldn't know for sure what was really in the bill. So sometimes things that advocates would say the bill did or didn't do was just not reflective of what the bill actually did. So I think the biggest roadblock was just fighting through all the static created by the debates surrounding this kind of legislation.
Okay. It kind of gained a lot of traction after you put it up. It got a lot of attention from the media. Rachel Zoll from the Associated Press got a hold of it and liked it, and we got calls from it at the office. So did you expect it to have this kind of impact on a national scale?
Well, I don't know that I would expect anything like that, but it's nice to know that some people are struggling with some of the same issues I was in terms of trying to keep track of which state was doing what exactly. And so I hope I tried to create the resource for everyone with that in mind, and sounds like it did help some people.
And just in general, tell me, why have you stuck with the blogging? You're coming up on your 10th anniversary. Why have you stuck with this BJC blog for so long? What about religious liberty issues have kept you interested?
Well, I think for me, religious liberty is in kind of a sweet spot, kind of where personal and private issues intersect with important kind of public policy concerns. You know, on the public level, we care about, you know, how we treat each other and how to respect one another and diversity and things like that. But religious liberty is also about very personal issues of conscience and how we make personal decisions of faith. And so the issue kind of fuels itself because runs in both of those currents, I think. And, you know, that's maybe a kind of big sounding reason for why I love religious liberty. But I couldn't have done it for this long if the people at the BJC weren't so great. You know, it's a very smart and thoughtful and passionate organization, and any way that I can contribute in some way to their message, that's worth it.
You post nearly every weekday. You know, sometimes when you're on vacation or something, we're like, where's Don? You know, but we really have come to expect, and the readers have come to expect, a new post just about every weekday. So how do you keep it fresh? How do you go about finding new angles to approach things with, and how do you go about finding new religious liberty news to report on?
Well, that's one of the easier things, actually, these days especially. I mean, like I said before, right now religious liberty is front page news on newspapers and news organizations across the country, so that's not too hard to find. But I also, you know, there's many sites that people that keep up with similar issues that are regional in basis or that are geared toward a particular faith. I, of course, keep up with Religion News Service and Baptist News Global and the Baptist Standard, and there's lots of sites like that. I mean, I would say I get lots of stories from my wife, even, who is also a news junkie. Never hurting for stories.
Okay. What other bloggers do you pay attention to? Because I know that, you know, you can read all the news you want, but it also helps to read blogs because they have more of a, sometimes they'll have more opinion or they'll have interesting links. So how do you navigate the blogosphere for your job?
Aaron Weaver is someone that I have to read all the time. Whatever he writes, I want to know about. There's a lawyer named Howard Friedman who writes a blog called Religion Clause, and I'm convinced that Howard never sleeps, because by the time I wake up most any day, he's already posted about everything that's happened everywhere in the last few hours. His site is pretty essential. He doesn't offer perspective so much as just information.
Now, Howard has linked to your articles on occasion, and that's just an example. Have you actually connected with other bloggers? I mean, do you guys go to happy hours together, or what kind of connections have you made through that?
Mostly just email connections. You know, we'll compare notes sometimes, or send a link, or, you know, people like that are always good. If I've got a typo or a mistake somewhere, they'll let me know, and I try to return the favor sometimes.
So tell me, how can people maximize what they get out of the blog?
Well, these days, I think one of the great things that we can do through our website is it's so easy to the media. I mean, the link's right there, and the pictures make them look nice. And so I think that's one way that people are making use of it, is just by sharing the story through Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and it's very simple to do there. But another thing that I've done since I started the blog really was try to tag posts by topic and also by state, so that if you're interested in a particular state or topic, you're just one click away from seeing all the posts recent years about that topic or in that state. So it's a kind of a way that you can keep up with what's happening that you may be more interested in than just every post ever.
Okay. Now, the current Supreme Court session is winding down, so we're looking towards the fall. What kind of stories are you looking forward to covering later this year?
Well, I'm looking forward to just sort of taking a breath and looking back over the year to seeing that. But I think, you know, we can't escape the fact that there's an election coming up. And so probably the end of this year could be involved with some election kind of religious discussion, which is always a dangerous time for us, because there's nothing like political candidates grandstanding about religion, and usually in election season we get a lot of that. So I look forward to that, I guess, and I don't at the same time.
How can people contact you?
Well, I'm on email, of course, don.bird@comcast.net, and that's a great way to interact with me, but also even more so on Twitter.
You have a Twitter account specifically for the BJC blog.
Yeah, I do. It's at BJC blog. Whenever I post, I try to put at least a headline out on Twitter so people will know. So even if a reader is not wanting to check in on the blog every day, if you want to follow Twitter just to check out all of the headlines, that's a That's a good way to go. So follow me at BJC blog. It's great to know what people who like aren't in the sort of bubble about being obsessed with a particular church state opinion or a particular issue, but just have a kind of immediate reaction to something, or maybe have a different perspective that I haven't thought about, or maybe, you know about an issue in a way that I haven't covered. It's always great to hear from people, or people that just have questions about, you know, what I think about an issue, or that have questions about what something means.
Are there any recent blog posts were memorable to you, or favorite blog posts that you would like to talk about?
Well, the most memorable ones are the posts about kind of quirky or unusual stories, or just things that make me bury my face in my palm. You know, one that comes to mind is the, maybe because I'm in Tennessee, is the judge in Tennessee, I think it was last year, who refused to allow a woman to name her child Messiah, or just stories like that that, you know, you couldn't make up, are the ones that are the most memorable. But I think in terms of favorites, I think what I love to do is write a post that gives me a chance to remind everyone that when government supports or endorses religion, it's not a good deal for people of faith. And that's the core of the BJC's message that is sometimes lost in the broader debate about religious liberty. That when government helps, it's not, or tries to help, it's not usually to the benefit of people of faith. So it's very easy to say, to want to celebrate maybe when a Ten Commandments gets posted at the courthouse because, you know, we believe in the Ten Commandments. And the harder thing is to think through that a little more. So about how that impacts not just people of minority faiths and people who may be disenfranchised by that, but how it's really not a good deal for us either. You know, we want our decisions of faith and conscience to be truly free. And when the government's giving that kind of help, it really undermines what is core to that kind of free choice. So when I have a post that lets me remind people of that perspective, you know, and like I say, too often the debate gets polarized and you almost get the sense that everybody who's against Ten Commandments at the courthouse must be a non-religious person. That's not the case, and I think it's always good to remind people of that perspective.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Don. I really appreciate you spending your time, your afternoon with me here. I'm sure there will be no shortage of things to write about in the coming months here.
I'm sure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Baptist Joint Committee podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our iTunes channel and read Don's coverage of the latest religious liberty news at bjconline.org/blog. You can also view our RFRA resources, including Don's state RFRA bill tracker, at bjconline.org/RFRA.